Welcome to Life, Lessons, and Laughter with your host, Glenn Ambrose.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Let's bring Aubrey on.
Hello.
Hello, Aubrey.
Hi. I was jamming out to the jingle.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yep. I like the ocean. It's like a whole, mood.
It's a whole mood, a minute.
It is. It's a mood. Where
it's got the Caribbean flair. I think it has a little steel drum action in there. I didn't want to go too heavy with the steel drum, though.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm a walking dichotomy. It's just a little bit of United States, a little bit of Boston, mixed in with my Caribbean.
That's amazing. There you go.
So today, we are talking about call-out culture.
Call-out culture.
So yeah. I'm going to call out the obvious and state that I am in a fishbowl.
We've discovered this. It's a new device. It's very, but you are not, you don't look like a fishbowl, just the perimeter of your screen.
Like that would be weird if my head went like.
It would be odd. It would be,
yeah, that'd be.
It would be really difficult for me to be on this podcast with you with that.
Yes. Yeah. I think it'd probably be hard for me. I'd be laughing the whole time.
Yep.
But yeah, so call out culture, you know, like I think to me, call out culture is one of those things that we're all aware of it. We all know that it's happening. We've all seen it happen. We've all probably done it. And it's really embedded into our culture. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons why I want to do a podcast on it, because it really is very widespread. But it's also one of those things that's just kind of there until you put your attention on it. You're not really sure what the hell it is. You know, you got ideas. I mean, you kind of know what it is, but like I had to Google it. You know?
I also same. Yeah. Well, you Googled it and then you told me, so it was perfect.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, a lot of things. That's probably, you know, most of how we live our lives. We kind of know stuff, but we don't look at it close enough to see if it actually makes sense or if it's doing anything or, you know, everything. We interact in life so surfacey. And so that's probably why it's like that, because this is a part of society and it's very surfacey, you know?
Yes.
But so I think it's, you know, and of course stuff like this has interpretation aspects. Everybody has a different perspective, different interpretations of it. So, you know, what I'm seeing is the call out culture. And like one of the first pieces that jumped out at me when I Googled it was what I think might be its origin. And the reason that it jumps out at me a lot, because I like understanding the motivation behind it. Like people are naturally good. People, you know, it's just what people are good. We're not out there trying to destroy our lives or other people's lives or cause dysfunction. We're actually trying to do the opposite, albeit unconsciously.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's helpful. Like when I understand a positive motivation towards something, then it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Because I don't believe that people just run around just doing stuff to hurt other people for no apparent reason. You know, there's gotta be, there's gotta be some sort of, you know, misguided mentality or something behind it, you know?
Agreed.
So my understanding is that the, you know, the call out culture is, who knows, it might've been birthed back like in the freaking 60s or something, because I kind of feel some residual stuff out of that. It's kind of pointing out things in society that are negative and that need to be changed, you know, for the benefit of all. So, you know, so I guess maybe some of the, now this is my own interpretation of it. You know, some of the obvious things might be when racism and sexism, you know, which have been big things in the last several years that people are pointing the fingers at and going, hey, there's something wrong with this. It shouldn't be like this. We need to make some change, you know.
Yeah.
And it's used for that. I think that it can incite some change, albeit surface change. It's not very deep change, mm-hmm. you know, but it does incite some change. And if we look back through history, it, you know, it's probably been used effectively in the past, you know, where, again, we can use racism and sexism. I mean, it's not that we still have racism and sexism, but it's not as bad as it was 100 years ago. So
right.
we've made some progress in those areas. So how did we make those progress? By pointing out the problems with it, you know, and having conversations and inciting change. So, you know, that's probably kind of where it came from. Now we're in the age of social media and being locked in our house for 3 years and stuff like that.
Right.
And technology and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it can get watered down. And it can give us a false sense of activism, I think, you know, just saying,
yeah.
because we can say something on social media and, you know, when we call somebody out on something or we call out a negative aspect of a topic, we can go like, yeah, that's crap. It shouldn't be like that. And then, of course, we feel good about ourselves because we're implying that we wouldn't, either implying or literally saying, I wouldn't do it that way if it was up to me.
Mm-hmm.
It should be this way. And then we actually, the illusion is that we actually accomplished something or that we're a good person or something, you know? And mm-hmm. it's not changing anything, you know?
There's more about action, and I feel like it's almost expecting, it's just pointing at the problem and expecting someone else to take the action to fix it.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, usually what we're like, if you dive into that, which a lot of people don't do, you know, they don't dive deeper, but it's like, who do we expect to make the change?
Right.
It's, you know, probably the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're in charge. Oh, hey, we're getting comments. At least from YouTube. Hey, Kevin. Yeah, you can't see him, can you? I
can't see them. What did Kevin say?
Kevin from Rhode Island said, hey there, my friend. I haven't talked to Kevin in a while. So it's cool that he's watching. Oh, and Janelle's watching. Janelle is in Lake Tahoe, I believe. So cool. Yeah. And she's on Facebook. So yeah, I'm seeing comments from everybody.
Oh, exciting.
Different. All right, good. We're working this week.
Yeah.
So who are we expecting to make the change? The government, like, which, you know, I think at this point, I think expecting the government to make a change is, you know, is like being kidnapped, you know, and falling for your kidnapper.
Stockholm syndrome. That's what it's like.
Yeah, this Stockholm syndrome is what we are in most developed countries. You know, we're just so inundated and so immersed that we're just like, we forget that we actually have, we have the power. They don't. They work for us. And we think that they don't, you know, we think that they're going to make the change and they're not. And, you know, if you spend years and tons of time, you know, lobbying and raising money and getting hundreds of millions of dollars together and petitions signed and push and push and push, and then you finally back them up to a corner where they actually have to do something, then they do something like they change like 10% of the problem and leave 90% of it. And then we, you know, we run around like it's a victory.
Right.
And we're like, yeah, see, we're making change. It's like, no, they threw you a bone to shut you up and make you feel like you're inciting change.
Yeah.
Because at this rate, you know, it took you 20 years to change 10%. So at this rate, it's going to take you 200 years to actually solve the problem. You know, like, no. And they know that.
Right. Like you will eventually solve the problem. It just may be a long.
Well, maybe that's if you keep constant pressure that you did for the same 20 years. Like right. Now you're depending on future generations. You're like you. A person can't do it. They can't keep it alive. So now you're hoping that this transfers through generations and and nobody kind of gets veered off from, I don't know, a war or COVID part deux or whatever is happening at the time.
Whatever. That was really funny. I was like, what did he just say? He's late Mondays. It takes me a minute.
So it's, you know, it's so I think at this point, and I realized this like 20 years ago, really, like after I woke up, I had a vague interest in politics when I was young and drunk, and just enough to bitch about stuff. And so when I became a responsible, awake human being, I was like, I'm going to look at social change, which is incited through politics. And who knows what my future holds? And I start looking at this stuff and I'm going, oh, my God, like this is the same stuff they were arguing about 20 years ago when I was on the bar stool. And sometimes it's the same people even.
Yeah.
Like. Nothing changes this way. And then I took a step back and I'm looking at all these, like all the problems that were problems 20 years ago. And I'm like, yeah, there's still problems. And then I started looking at, you know, more problems and how flawed the system is and everything. And I'm like, where I'm going to have to pray for a spiritual shift, because there ain't no fixing this. Like it was just obvious to me back then that like we could elect the perfect person in every local, state, and federal election for the next 50 years, 100 years, and we still wouldn't be able to fix the machine that was created with broken parts, with a broken goal that is completely broken. So now, you know, now thankfully the spiritual shift is happening. And I'm thinking like there's, you know, there's kind of two ways that this call out culture comes into play. And one is just realizing what I've been saying for a while now is like, we're not going to fix the world. Like there isn't, if you think we're going to stamp out racism and sexism and the unfair shift of money and people start, we're going to like solve poverty or homelessness or starvation. If you think we're going to solve any of those things with the system that's in place now, you're delusional. Because I mean, we can't fix them now. Like we couldn't have fixed them in the last 50 years. Like
not with the same formula we've been using.
Right. We have the ability to fix these problems, mm-hmm. but we're not making any ground because it's not profitable to make any ground. And nobody's interested in solving these problems. I mean, the masses are, the normal people are, right. but the people in charge, I mean, if they were actually trying to solve these problems, at least one of them would have been solved. Or at least we would have made so much progress that we'd be on the edge of like just transcending at least one major problem. Mm-hmm. And we're not, you know, and it's because the problem, the structure is broken. And so it's that paradigm is falling apart now. So it's, which is like, cool. Like I get all excited finally, you know, I've been waiting for this time.
Perfect. Finally.
I'm like, yes, yes, finally the world is collapsing. Thank you, God. And that's probably not the general consensus, but yeah. It's mine.
You're like rock bottom. Yeah. Finally.
Yes, yes, rock bottom. That's when my life changed.
Yep.
That's when everybody else that I know's life's changed.
It's contrast.
Yeah. So this is how we can change the world. So now, you know, we are creating a new paradigm and we're letting go of the old paradigm. And I think that is really the best reasoning to let go of this call out culture, mm-hmm. because it doesn't solve anything. Like we've been, you know, it even has a name now, call out culture. It's a whole freaking culture. You can Google it. Mm-hmm. Like everybody around the world knows what it is. That's how widespread it is. And it's not solving anything. If anything, it's perpetuating the problem because now we just hate each other because we've been calling each other out on everything.
Right.
It's not. And if somebody uses the wrong word, God forbid.
Right. And it's one of those things that, you know, the intention behind it is not malicious, and it's really intended on, I would hope, helping or, you know, trying to resolve the issue. But it's just the path to help. What's that phrase? Did you just sneeze? Bless you.
I cough.
Oh, I just sneezed.
I drank water wrong.
I thought that, but I was like, it was doing the things they tell you not to do. I'm like holding it in. It's what's that phrase? I kind of hate it, honestly. The path to hell was paved with intentions, kind of thing, you know, and it's meant to, I think that the creation of it was with good intentions, and it kind of just took on a life of its own, and people abuse it and they use it to be right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. You know, you know, we naturally have good intentions. You know, everybody wants to be loved and heard and understood and accepted. We're more alike than we are different, you know? So it's unfortunately we just rise, we go a step up surfacey above that. And we pretend now it's like we all have to have the same opinion on everything. And the opinion keeps changing. Like lately, I think two different times within the past couple weeks, there was a reference made. I don't know if I was talking to you, but there was a reference made about being woke. Like it might have been my friend Michelle. I don't know. But it was like apparently being woke is, you know, is kind of slang for awakened.
Yeah. You're woke. Yes, that's correct.
And now that apparently that's a bad thing now. Like,
yes, it's it's all about the way we perceive it. From what I understand, I think like woke was just people use it almost as a condescending term, as if like you feel that you're better than others. That's how I perceive it. But it's all perception.
Right. And it's like and that's the problem is I can't keep track of this stuff. And
how are you supposed to? That's the whole thing.
Well, if you don't, then people call you out on it.
Yeah.
Right. So then now you're a bad person because you used woke or you used this or you used that. And, you know, I noticed this with it's in my brain. I was like going to point to a period of time by using problems. And I was like, that's been going on forever. But it was like when I was seeing the racism issues and the sexism issues and the COVID stuff, the terminology was what people were arguing over. They weren't arguing over the point. You know, it was like I saw a huge with the racism stuff going on with the Black Lives Matter. It was like every like, and I wasn't even involved in some of these conversations where people, or I would see them and people were arguing because they didn't like the term Black Lives Matter. They wanted to use the term All Lives Matter. Right. And the people that were using the Black Lives Matter said, listen, we're, you know, I looked into it because I was curious. It's like, you know, because I was curious. So I looked into it and I saw that, like, they said, no, when we're saying Black Lives Matter, it's like if you're in a neighborhood and your house is on fire and I say, hey, please, can you help me put out the fire at my house? And somebody says, well, my house, I have a house in this neighborhood too.
But that's not the one on fire.
It's like, well, I understand you have a house. My house is important. It's like, I understand your house is important, but your house isn't on fire right now. Mine's on fire. So could we focus on the one that's on fire? That's all we're saying. We're not saying that your house isn't important. We're not saying that your life isn't important. What we're saying is that ours are being threatened at this particular moment. So could we focus on that? That's it. And that made sense to me. And I was like, oh, okay. So I don't give a crap what words they use. I give a crap what they're saying. I give a crap about the meaning of what somebody is saying. I don't care what words they use to describe it. As long as we can get on the same page. If it's a weird term that I don't fully understand and then somebody explains it to me and I go, oh, well, yeah, you know, okay, cool, I'm with you. Right. Then I'm with them. But people aren't doing that. They're going, no, it's the term. It's the term. It's the term. It's like, no. Meanwhile, this house is burning down all over the street and they're just arguing because you verbalized it wrong. What we're doing, and I saw this with the with the Colin Kaepernick taking a knee in the football game, mm-hmm. all that explosion. I was like, why are people freaking out? So of course I look into it. It's like, what? Because that's what I do. I actually look.
No, you type into Google, or you're like, why are people freaking out about this?
Yes. Sometimes I literally do that.
I wanted to know for myself for future reference. That's why.
Yes, sometimes I do.
Right now, if you need to know, this is exactly what you have to do.
Or sometimes I just type in if somebody is saying something, I search them. So it's like, so Colin Kaepernick is saying something, or the people that are backing him are saying something. What are they saying? You know, and what I found that they were saying is they're like, no, we are using our platform to draw attention to racism in the United States. We are not disrespecting the military. We do not mean it that way. That is not our intention. And we're not even disrespecting the country. We're just saying that there's problems in it. That's it. And they specifically say this. And then other people come in and they go, no, that's not what you're saying.
That's amazing to, it's how frustrating that feels. It's almost like it's invalidating, you know.
It's totally invalidating, so if you take this full circle, I didn't know it was going to go here, but like one of the things that I found interesting was this post towards the end of the Black Lives Matter thing. And the riots were going on and burning and everybody was freaking out going, why are these people burning down their own neighborhoods? Why are they burning down neighborhood? They're violent. They're angry. This is not a way to solve a problem, right? That's what the other side was saying. And then there was this post and it said, it said, oh, you don't want us getting angry and burning neighborhoods down because of racism. Maybe you're telling us we should take a different route. You mean like taking a knee at a football game? You mean like doing that? And it listed like five different things that that they had done prior to freaking out and burning down cities. And it was like, we tried doing it every way that you told us to do it.
And now we're going to scream.
Yeah. And nobody listened. So we're freaking out because we're frustrated, you know, and I'm not saying that burning down a neighborhood is a good idea. What I'm saying is I understand, you know, I've been in situations where, you know, I was saying, listen, there's a problem here. Listen, there's a problem here. And people wouldn't listen. And I got frustrated and started screaming, hey, there's a problem. And then all of a sudden people are going like, why are you so upset?
You're like, because of all the times I said it to you very.
It's because of, let me tell you, let me show you the 14 things that I did before I got here that you ignored.
Right now. Okay.
So it's, you know, this is. You know, this is where things go awry is when the wording is more important. And we say, well, when you kneel, it means disrespect to me. So that means it means disrespect to you. I don't even understand the real rationale. I know it's surfacey. That's where it lives. But like, if you go deep enough, you don't get to tell other people what they're like what their words mean or what their actions mean. If somebody says, I am kneeling because I'm standing up against this, you don't get to come in and say, no, you're not kneeling for that. You're kneeling for something else.
Right.
Like,
how do you even
And then we think we're going to have like we're rational and we're going to have a peaceful society. No, we're not. You can't tell other people what they think and what they mean by their actions and expect to live in a community with love and respect. You don't even respect what they're saying.
How frustrating. Can you just like imagine just the most simple thing? Like you come to work and you're like, hey, I'm not feeling well because I'm tired. And they're like, well, no, I think you're not feeling well because of X, Y, and Z. You're like, no, this is I just said it.
They're like, no, you're just trying to take a day off.
Of course you're going to start screaming.
Right.
Of course you're going to start screaming. How frustrating is that? Like,
and I think we've all had that experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know? So this is, you know, so that's, you know, this is what's wrong with the call out culture is we're sitting in our living room on our laptop or our phone, determining what we think is right and wrong for everybody else, what they mean by what they do. And in the safety of our little house, we can lash out at other people with no consequences. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's dangerous. You're almost like you're falsely rewriting history.
they get pissed off. And then like, where's all this anger go?
Right.
You know, like I got to preface this. I do not recommend life being like this because it's dysfunctional in its own right. But like, I remember, you know, growing up, I've referenced a lot of times it was a fairly rough town. But at least you knew where you stood.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were out somewhere, you would watch what you said because within reason, not overly, because no, you know, now it's overly. You have to watch every word that comes out of your mouth because you're bound to piss somebody off. And it's like, which of course I don't know.
I can't imagine you doing that.
I can't. I'd love to, and I've even tried.
You're like, that's actually my MO. That's why I do this.
I'm incapable. I failed miserably in my mouth.
Man, that's dangerous.
But back in the day, it's like, you know, there was consequences.
Right.
You know, if somebody was like, hey, screw you.
In the face, and then you won't do it again.
Yeah. I was like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe I should. That's, you know, that's why I used to treat people that grew up in our, people in our town, as a general rule, you treated them with a certain level of respect because they knew your parents, you know, you'd get in trouble. Or, you know, it was like,
and it's just, I think that the level of respect was just different and the questioning was different, you know?
Right. And, you know, I'm glad you said that because I think a good example of it is when I grew up, like, you didn't talk about politics. Like, if somebody asked who you were voting for when I was young, that they were like, that's none of your business.
Good, right.
Yeah, it's like it's none of your business.
Who right, it's like it's almost like asking about something financial. It's not something that you would typically come up and ask someone. Yeah. Hey, what's your political status? Like,
right. And then now it's like everybody talks about it and fights over it. It's like, wait, like we're supposed to be on the same page.
Right.
And that's the thing of it is we have to get underneath all this stuff. One, like, understand that the world is falling apart as it is. And it should fall apart. It's a nightmare. It's dysfunctional and it's a mess. So let it fall apart and put your attention over onto focusing on creating what you do want to create. Mm-hmm. And that's a community, you know, just living over here in the DR, I've gotten, and I mean, you know, sometimes I say I live in a spiritual community in the mountains. Yeah, kind of. I mean, technically, I guess, but it's not really a spiritual community. I mean, it's a piece of property where two of my friends live in one part of a duplex. Another one lives in another duplex that I can walk to in 60 seconds or less.
Nice. Yeah.
And the owner of the property believes in spiritual type principles. And they built some casitas where we can have some retreats now that wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. And we all, so yeah, there's a spiritual theme, but we all, you know, it's not like we're all harmonizing together and singing Kumbaya by the fire and like.
Well, because if you're spiritual and woke, that's what you do.
Right. So I'm woke. In trouble. But, but you know, it, but nonetheless, not only the people on our property, but the people up here in the mountains, it is a community to some degree, at least more so than in more developed countries.
Absolutely. You know,
so you do depend on one another. Like, you know, driving, I was driving to pick up a friend that lives up near, like 15 minutes from me, to drive down to the beach city that's like 45 minutes away. On the 15-minute drive from my house to her house, somebody waves me over on the side of the road and it's a young kid that happens to be a police officer with a big duffel bag and asked me for a ride in Spanish down. I don't even remember where he was going.
Remember the ride, right?
So yeah, like hop in, you know? So he hops in. I pick up my friend. It's like, yeah, I'm giving this guy a ride. Oh, nice to meet you. Okay. So we all end up swapping phone numbers. Those two needed to do something. They ended up putting together a trip to a waterfall with like eight other people. I go, we hop in, have a great day, come back. And then all of a sudden my friend looks at me and goes, you don't know this guy? The cop came with us.
We just met when I picked him up.
Yeah. I was like, he found, we needed two vehicles, mine and another one. He found the other vehicle and we all went. And my friend's like, you don't know this guy? Like, I'm like, no, I just picked him up on the side of the road 5 minutes before I picked you up.
You know? Now, I guess.
But this is how the culture is. I mean, I can't count how many people I gave a ride down this mountain to that I don't know. You know, I mean, like sometimes one time I picked up an old lady that was like 65 years old on the side of a dirt road and brought her down 45 minutes to a city. Like I was going that way.
Yeah.
she hopped in and I gave her a ride.
Yeah.
So you depend on one another is my point. And you don't fear one another. You know, that's what's different about living up here. And you have to learn, like, sometimes I don't think or speak the same way that my neighbors think and speak. Sometimes we disagree. What the hell am I going to do? You know, you get over it. Like, you're supposed to get over it. Like, kids get over it. You know, like when kids argue, their best friend, they're best friends again, you know, the next day.
Box. Yeah, it's nothing.
Or an hour later, you know. So that's part of living in community. And we don't do that anymore. Instead, if we have a difference of opinion on something, we think it actually means something. And it doesn't. Mm. We're supposed to have differences of opinion. We're all individuals. Remember that little different fingerprint and a snowflake reference we were taught?
Oh, man.
You know, when we're children, we're freaking individuals.
Yeah.
We're supposed to, you know, the whole point is for us to be different. We're supposed to be different. We're supposed to think differently. That's why when we come together, we are more together than we are separate. Because we have multiple perspectives and we have multiple capabilities and we can see things at different angles and work together and create something more because of our different perspectives. And it's a beautiful thing when we embrace it. But at this day and age, it's like it's something dirty. If you think differently than I think, then you're wrong. It's like, no, whoa. When did we lose perspectives?
Right. It's so black and white. It's so. And we live in the gray. You know, you say that in a lot of your podcasts. And I utilize that a lot in my life because I feel like in our culture, we tend to really think everything truly is black and white. And I hate to use that term just because everything we've been talking about, but really is like, but like, you know, it's one way or another. It's right or wrong. It's black or white. It's, you know, it's not, it's amazing that people, we get so stuck in our, we get almost trapped by our own opinions, you know, and our perceptions. And it's, I was talking to someone the other day and he was kind of just, he was trying to guess the culture of someone at work. Like he met her, we met, and he was like, what's your culture? What's your background? And he was naming all these like different things, right? And she's mixed. She's half black and she's half white. And he's naming, you know, like Spanish, this, that, whatever. And we're there. And I look at him and I said, forget what you know. Like, stop. Forget what you know. Because he's, you know, Dominican. Like, he was just naming all these things. And it took him about 10 minutes. And then he goes, oh, I know. Because he completely wiped out, like, that pre-notion thought of trying to figure out what it is through what he knows. It's just like, bring yourself back to basics.
Yeah.
You know, because I find myself in that space. I'll trap myself and not be able to move past it.
I had a few conversations, I don't even remember what they were about. It was COVID era. So I think at least one of them had to do with COVID. Maybe another one didn't. But like sometimes I actually do want to understand, because like I said, when I don't understand like the other side, it sometimes it bugs me because I'm like, it can't be what it looks like. There must be something positive or logical or something underneath, because it's not making sense to me up here.
Yeah.
So I'll have conversations with, you know, usually I pick somebody that I feel is intelligent and can, and even keeled to be able to have a conversation like that. And I had conversations and we went back and forth on all these points. And what I noticed during that conversation is like, I understood his point. I just didn't agree with it.
Right.
You know, so I was like, oh, okay. So I at the end of the conversation, I understood his point and I chose to stay thinking the way that I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
but I understood how he came to his conclusions.
Yeah.
And
because then you're just assigning meaning, you know.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't have to agree with that. I'm just wondering how you're thinking to arrive to it. Like, oh, okay, that's what you're thinking. Oh, okay. Well, I still disagree with it, but at least I understand that you use some sort of logical process to get there. Yeah. And it makes sense to you. And I respect that. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, but what I noticed when I did this with people, they weren't doing that back to me. Like towards the end of the conversation, like, when I was kind of feeling complete, like, okay, I got what I needed. Now I understand how you think. They were starting to go like, Glenn, I think that there's something wrong with you. Like you might need some help. I think you're messed up in the head, like brainwashed or there's something, you know, there's something wrong with you. And I'm now all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute. Now this is getting personal. And I had to take a step back and go like, why? You know, why did they come to that conclusion? Because in our conversation, I came up with, like, I explained my thought process very clearly, and it's perfectly logical. Now, if you want to disagree, that's fine. You can take everything that I said and go, well, I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you keep thinking the way you think. But you can't. But looking at me, like, because I have a different opinion and a different perspective on the same topic doesn't jive with yours at the end, you think that I'm literally insane? You think that I need psychological help because I have a different perspective than you. This is where we've gotten to in a society. We can't even comprehend that there's more than one way to look at something. That's the problem. You know?
Yeah, so much loss of self-expression that way.
Right. Like, and that's really what I think we lead to right now. I think that's exactly where we are. That was I'm glad you said that. Wow. It really pinpoints where we are with this call-out culture, because where we are with this call-out culture is we are just demonizing everybody. You cannot speak without pissing somebody off.
Yeah.
You can't. And that's what it's become fashionable to run around pointing the finger, this self-righteous finger at everybody going, you know, like it's, and I see it in the spiritual circles too.
Oh yeah.
You know,
it's like, there's a thing, like that I was reading about the other day, toxic positivity. And it was like the whole phrasing where it's like good vibes only, you know, and people kind of now perceiving that as like, if you don't have good vibes, you're not welcome here kind of thing. And I'm like, I don't know, like, cause I can, it's really, to me, it's just perspective and it's just the way you use it, you know?
Right. And that's a good example. We might have to do a podcast on toxic positivity because it's just
like the next one. Yeah.
It's just a perspective. Like, you know, some people think that like I have toxic positivity because I don't sit in the problem. Like this is one of the most misconceived things about me is because I choose not to stay in the problem. I choose not to stay angry. Then that means I'm dismissing my emotions and I'm not honoring them and all that stuff. It's like, no, for a minimal thing to happen in your life, it contains 20 to 30 seconds worth of emotion. Mm. Emotion is energy. It's supposed to pass through us, capture our attention and say, hey, this is important. You might want to look at this. If it's positive, you might want to experience it again. If it's negative, you might not want to experience this again. You might want to take steps to make sure that you don't experience this again. And it's supposed to pass right through us. And we're supposed to get the message and then move on with our lives. We're not supposed to be angry about the same thing a year later or 2 years later or 20 years later. That's just carrying it with you. It serves no purpose.
Yeah.
Except, you know, so I look at something and if I'm angry, then I'll usually have to pace for a while, maybe drop 150 F-bombs in 5 minutes and get it out of my system.
Yes.
And then I can sit down and go, okay, do I want to stay angry about this? Yeah. I'm angry because I feel like a victim. Is there another way to look at this so I don't feel like a victim in the future? I want a more empowering outlook, you know?
It's interesting. Have you ever seen, there's a video of Will Smith where he goes skydiving? It's a really cool video. Maybe. He talks about skydiving and it's quick, so I'll be quick. But basically, he talks about going skydiving with his friends. It's like the night before, they're all like drinking, they're having fun. They're like, let's go skydiving. And like, everyone's excited. They're all like, I'm going, you're going, you know? And he's like, and then the next day you're like, he's like, I don't know about this, like whatever. And he just talks about, he's like, the morning of the skydiving, he goes, I could not enjoy my breakfast at all. I was so anxious. I was so worried. Like everything, the whole day was ruined up until skydiving and all the way up until the point where he is at the plane and they push him out. It's bliss. And he's so happy. And like, there's no fear, you know, there's none. Because it's in the moment of the action. It's all like leading up to it. And how sitting in that emotion, it just ruined his day for literally no reason. He says after, he's like, why couldn't I enjoy my breakfast? I did it to myself. I could have enjoyed my breakfast. I had a great day.
So that's exact. So in that situation, what I do is if something's bothering me and I'm upset about it, I'm not sitting there going, I have to experience this all day because I honor my feelings.
Right.
No, right. I sit there and I go, I don't like the way this feels. I don't like being upset. So what's upsetting me? Oh, yeah. I have fear about going skydiving. Oh, well, that's natural. You're jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. Of course you're going to have fear. You know?
Yep.
Oh, okay. So like, why don't you just make a choice? If, you know, if you don't want to do it, then don't do it and decide it now. If you do want to do it, then accept that you're going to have a little bit of fear and, you know, worrying about it isn't going to help you.
No, it doesn't serve you.
Right. It doesn't serve. How do I benefit by walking around in fear and worry for the next 8 hours until I jump out of a plane? It doesn't benefit me. So then I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, okay, I'm going to have to put my trust in the parachute, or I'm going to have to, you know, put the trust that I'm eternal. And if I splat, then I'll just be floating around in heaven, you know, like whatever, like whatever you need to do for you. It's your perspective. So it's going to be different for everybody. You know, whatever you need to do to make peace with it, but you don't have to walk around in that suffering, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, I gotta get back to the,
I could see it on your face.
To the spiritual. So like in, you know, in the spiritual life, I think we're pointing our fingers at things too much. Oh, this is the right way. You know, we get on our high horse. This is when I talk about spiritual snobbery. It's like, because we're coming from love, then we must be better than everybody else. It's like, no, you're not. Does that mean that love isn't better? No, love is better, but you're not. I'm not better than anybody else because I'm coming from love and they're not. That doesn't make me better. It makes me different. That's it. And different isn't better. I mean, do I want people coming from love? Yes, I do want people coming from love. But if I judge them because they're not coming from love, that's judgment. And I am no longer coming from love. You know, that's the crux of it. We can't rationalize why we have the right to be judgmental.
Yeah.
And call it love. Yeah, but I'm coming from love and they're coming from hate. Yeah, but they're judging you and you're judging them. You're doing the same thing.
Right.
So it, you know, it doesn't matter if you're coming from love, if you're being judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you say you're coming from love, but other people have to do what you think is right. That's manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're truly holding space for someone, when you're holding space and you're just receiving and listening, you know, it's not, I think you mentioned this you definitely mentioned this in a podcast before, but, you know, comparing either makes you better or less than. It's like, right. Not, there's no winning to that, you know, like you can't, your opinion is just your opinion and it's their opinion is their opinion. And once you compare them, you're going to like, one is going to be better and one's going to be less than, like, there's no,
right.
It's just the ego either way.
Right. So you're either going to feel like crap about yourself or you're going to feel better than somebody else.
It's
either way.
Everything. Yeah. It's
ego.
You're either going to be better than or less than. So right. Is it really something you want to do?
And that's going to feed your ego.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's either in a negative way or a positive way, but it's ego food either way.
Yep. And then the conversation is no longer about holding space or even being present for that other person.
Yeah. This is why I like using the term energy so much, because it's not what we do. It's the energy in which we do it.
Agreed.
You know, so it's that's what we have to pay attention to. It's like, you know, the biggest, like I heard somebody say, I forgot who it was. I heard somebody say years ago, they're like, you know, I could imagine Jesus coming to earth again, you know, and just coming down and going, I could see Jesus is just looking back going, you guys missed it. You missed the whole damn thing.
You missed the
mark. I was just, you know, I was just saying love. That's it. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. You don't have to kneel. You don't have to build big buildings. You don't have to follow 10 commandments. You don't have to. Those 10 commandments were just pointing towards love. That's a. They were. I was just trying to give you freaking clip notes to
right.
love.
I was trying to give you a good start and just the basics. Yeah. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Don't lie.
Yeah. You know.
Really not, don't have too much of anything.
Yeah. It's just. It was just love. Right. That's it.
Yeah,
you know, I was just kind of pointing in directions, but like if you have a window of love, and everything you do has to pass through that window, or it doesn't work, then I think we're heading out to the right direction. So if you go like, you know what, I have to stand up against injustice, and. Like, so I'm going to tell these people that they can't do that. Mm-hmm. Oh, is that loving? Does it pass through my window of love? And see, this is where people get confused. They go, yes, because I'm trying to create a loving world. No, that's the end. See, the end does not justify the means. And people think that it does, and it doesn't. The end does not justify the means. The end is a culmination of the means. So you cannot lie, cheat, and steal, manipulate, judge, and then get to a place of love. That's not where love lives. There's no love destination at the end of a judgment road.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So like you got to walk the non-judgment road to get to non-judgment, which is loving, you know? So it's about letting go of all the ways we think we're going to fix things. I have to stand up for what's right. No, you don't. You just have to live it.
Yeah.
Just go live it in your life. You be what's right with the world. You be loving. Yeah, but we have to make sure have you seen like there's many dysfunctional people in the world? Yes, leave them alone. Let them be dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. Don't put your attention on them because you're not going to fix them. If somebody is truly dysfunctional because they want to be, you ain't going to fix them. Most people aren't. They're just dysfunctional because society is dysfunctional, and that's what they've been trained to do and domesticated to. So all you got to do, like, you have to be the change you wish to see. Mm-hmm. Be the change you wish to see. Be an example of love. And then when somebody's sitting around going, geez, I'm not feeling good in my heart. I don't like the way I'm living my life. I need to find another way. Oh, what's that? That looks interesting. Maybe I'll go do that. And they will come to you. It's attraction rather than promotion, like they teach in recovery. Mm-hmm. Attraction rather than promotion. Just be what you want the world to be. And somebody else is the way they want. We can't change other people. It takes open-mindedness, honesty, and willingness to change. And most people don't have that yet. But they will. But we have to give them a place to go to when they start questioning themselves, because that's how it starts. People start going, geez, maybe there's another way to live. Maybe there's another way to look at things. This doesn't seem, there must be more to life. You know, when that angst starts building, we want a really beautiful, loving community over here for them to go, oh, there is another way. Maybe I'll try those weird love people thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird and everything, but.
I mean, it's having the resources and support for when shit hits the fan and it's easy to fall, you know, into those patterns.
Yeah. And when they go to you and they're like, wow, this really feels non-judgmental. This feels loving. Oh, I love this. I'm accepted for who I am. This is like unconditional love over here. This is good. I want this. Then they'll do it. But if they come over to us spiritual people and we go, so I just kind of want to pay attention to you guys. I'm not really sure yet. And, you know, I'm not sure what I'm doing. And then we go, yeah, well, your side, the way you've been living sucks and it's really bad and they're horrible. They're like, oh, that feels like judgment. I thought you guys were supposed to be love.
Right.
Well, we are. We're cursing bad people. So our cursing is okay because we're cursing the bad people.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, that feels confusing to me.
Very.
It feels incongruent. You say you're love, but yet you put down others. And then I misspoke and you judged me too. You said, I can't say that. So now I have to watch everything that I say around you, but you're supposed to be love and acceptance.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like love and acceptance. It feels like it feels just as bad as those knuckleheads.
Yeah.
You know, and this is why that's what's really going to speed up the shift is when we get that, because that's where we are. We've been there for a little while and we haven't gotten it yet. This is, and I think it's going to be helped by us focusing on just creating a new paradigm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we'll start working through that. That's going to be part of what we're going to be going through over the next few years is us getting through that. Us saying that we live in love and wanting the world to be love while we're running around judging everybody that isn't loving. Mm. We have to separate from that because it's not love. We're not creating a reality based in love. Nope. We're creating a reality based in judgment, which eventually would look just like this one looks.
Yep. You can't cherry pick where you want to be spiritual.
Right.
You can't, you know, it's kind of like all or nothing.
Yeah, it is.
It's just the truth.
And we just have to be love, you know, and that's it. And stop the judgment and stop the, you know, pointing the finger and the spiritual snobbery of thinking that we're better because we're based in love when all we're doing is just rationalizing our own crappy behavior, you know. And I'm not saying that I do it too. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, this is stuff that I'm working on too, you know. I mean, I know that I still have judgments that I shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. But instead of, you know, rationalizing them, I'm looking at him going, Glenn, really? Like, that's your love?
I hear you.
Doesn't sound like love. Sound like a judgmental ass, you know? But but that's where change comes from. Change comes with the ability to be honest with yourself, you know? Honest, open-minded, and willing. So we have to be open-minded and... Not in the way the spiritual movement is now. That's not actually open-minded. That's that all that is I'm open-minded as long as you talk about love all the time.
Yeah.
If you don't, then I judge you and demonize you and call you bad.
Yep. You got to be here for all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, well, that's not open-minded. Yeah. You got to be willing to do the work yourself so you can be the change. Not willing to fix everybody else that you're incapable of fixing.
Yeah.
You're just pointing you can't fix anybody else. This is how I think this is going to be helpful because a lot of spiritual people like 10, 15 years ago, we started getting the deep understanding that we can't save other people. So a lot of people have gotten that. A lot of people on the spiritual path understand that we can't save others. Now we have to take that mentality and actually implement it into our lives in a tangible way. And this is the tangible way, or one of the tangible ways. It's going, we can't save everybody. So that means all you're doing is judging. Mm. You're just pointing the finger, judging, because you can't save them. So why is your attention on them other than to make yourself feel more loving?
Yeah.
I'm love, they're not, therefore I'm better. It's just an ego stroke.
You know? Yeah.
So we have to stop doing that. So there's no real reason to be paying attention to the dysfunction because you can't change it. And if you can't change it, then all you're doing is judging it. So right. Put your focus on just being love, being love, being love, and letting go of that judgment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's,
stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
Be the change. Mm-hmm. Stay in your lane.
Control what you can control and let go of what you can't.
Look at that.
That's it.
Just truth, truth spouting out of Aubrey as we sit here and watch. Wow,
it's been a few weeks. This is what happens when you life coach with Glenn. Anyone needs to know. Just saying.
Yeah, it's really magic.
Really long pauses and conversations, and people are like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm just thinking about what I'm going to say."
I would just like to give you a conscious response.
Yeah,
it's valuable.
Exactly. I just got to keep them stimulated while I'm trying to keep my conscious response.
And then now when you do speak, do people appreciate it when you give them a thoughtful answer?
Very much so.
Yeah. It's cool. It's cool when somebody it can be a little bit off-putting in the beginning when you're pausing with people sometimes, you know, and the better you get at it, you can pause pretty quickly. You can disconnect.
It's just like a timeout in the middle of your conversation. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it doesn't like you can kind of disconnect from the pull and then bring yourself into the present moment. That's really all it takes. Yeah. So it does go quicker, but like it's amazing. I have yet to get a negative feedback for pausing.
Mm-mm,
you know, no. Like because people actually like the idea that what they said, you are absorbing, thinking about, that means you value it. You're absorbing it. You're thinking about it. And then you're giving a thoughtful response to what they said. It's this thing called like communication we used to do, I think 150,000 years ago. It's and we're trying to do it now. We're bringing back communication. Wow. Where you actually listen to what somebody says instead of wait for them to shut up so you can fucking start speaking.
Literally. Waiting for your turn to speak, thinking about what you're going to say.
Right.
You don't absorb it.
So it's like you actually listen to what people say, absorb it, and then give them a conscious response. It's a wonderful way to communicate.
It's nice.
Yeah, it is. People really appreciate it. Well, you got anything else?
That's it. I think that's it.
I think that's it.
We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we got to stay in our conscious lane.
Staying in my lane. Just
don't worry about what other people are doing because we're not going to fix it that way. But we have to raise consciousness around this topic. No, we don't. Because the systems that are in place that you think that are going to fix it, they're not interested in fixing it. So like, even if you raise consciousness and all that stuff, it ain't going to get fixed anyway. And if you're lucky enough that it does, it's going to be a minimal throw a dog a bone change. And you're going to be doing that for the next 1,000 years. And we don't have that long. We're going to blow ourselves up before that happens. So we just need to focus on a new paradigm, get better at having that new paradigm be actually based in unconditional love, not theoretically, but actually based in it. Mm-hmm. And we have to work on ourselves to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's whenever I put a post and people say, oh, I know, I hate it when people are like that. I'm like, oh, you missed it.
You missed
I wasn't talking about the other people, dear. I was talking about you.
That's part of the problem.
Every one of my posts, I'm talking about you. And that means whoever is watching it, whoever is listening to it, I'm talking to you because you do it too. Mm-hmm. And I know that because I've been busting my ass in this spiritual stuff for 19 years and I still do it.
Yeah.
So, and I see it in the people that have been busting their ass on this spiritual journey for 40 years.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
We're getting better. We're getting better at it. You know, we're getting new.
Takes time.
Definite progress, but we still have work to do on ourselves, each one of us.
Yeah. So.
All right. Let's wrap it up.
Sounds good. Wrapping it up.
Yeah.
So that was good. So yeah, Mike, I'll just repeat what he said. That's it.
That's it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
thanks for listening.
I guess. Yeah. Thanks for listening. And thanks for this. Every once in a while, I look at my fishbowl and it's a little freaky. It looks like my eyes are going over in this direction.
Yeah, it's starting to, I don't know if it's just because we've been recording for a while or because your screen is actually like that.
My camera is up here. Oh, I'm going to have to play around with it.
A little late in the game now. I think it's fun. Watching, it doesn't normally go like this, but sometimes
and no, it's even worse for the people who aren't watching. The people who are just on audio, they're like, what's he doing?
Literally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm looking into
you're gonna have to watch the video if you want to see what's happening. It's live. Yeah,
it's really, live. It's really weird. All right, that'll do.
Great.
Thank you, Aubrey. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Yes, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'll talk to you.
Looking for more? Check out over 200 episodes of Life Lessons and Laughter, or click the link in the description of this episode to connect with Glenn directly.